Welcome to Overtures. This particular episode was unfortunately and unknowingly cut off about halfway through, so only half of it exists on YouTube. However, this is a very special episode, as I caught up with my guest this past week to see what he's up to, make up for the lost half of his episode, and talk about his new film. All links are in the show notes. Take your seats, we'll be starting shortly. Hi, welcome. Happy Sunday. Hope everyone's doing well. Welcome to episode 16. Welcome to episode 16 of Overtures. And if anyone sees this little one in the corner here, that's my partner. He says hi. Harry says hi. He's playing Pokemon Arceus Legends. So if anyone has been enjoying that game, like I'll get out. Hit us up. Been playing it tons. But yeah, welcome to episode 16. I'm going to be starting with a clip today. So bear with me as I go to share my screen. It's a fun little clip. We're going to have a grand old time.
Hello.
Oh, we don't like buffering.
Maybe.
Oh, there we go.
Hello.
Looks just like me.
Yes, it does. Smaller.
Well, yes.
I think that's such a fun and delightful place to stop that scene. My guest today is an actor, writer, and filmmaker based outside of Boston. He's earning his MFA in film and TV writing at Emerson College. In his spare time, he continues to go on long tangents about Spider-Man 2, 2004, being the greatest movie ever made to passing strangers on the street. I've been very lucky to know this guest for quite literally since his earliest beginnings in college, and it's always been such a joy to see him grow as a performer, writer, and beyond. He'll always be my peer baby, probably much to his chagrin. This is David Leon.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well now after that heartwarming introduction.
I'm so glad you enjoyed that. And you're up in Massachusetts right now, yeah?
This is true. This is factual.
Nice. That's so exciting. And how do we know each other? Specifically, we know each other from Wagner, as many of my guests, but you know, that's okay. But specifically, to give clarification for those who aren't watching, about that comment during my intro for you, I was David's peer leader during orientation, which makes you my peer baby. But yeah, no, you and Kirsten Kaiser were like my children during that orientation, and it's been so amazing to see you both grow so much as performers. I don't believe we ever had any classes together, though. Did we?
No, I guess not.
I don't think we ever did.
Not
which
that
is,
I can think of, at least.
Yeah, which is weird to think about. But I will always claim responsibility for introducing you to your big, my good friend and former guest of the show, Zach Norris.
Oh, that's a favorite memory of mine. You just rushing me over to Zach Norris and being like, you two, talk, mingle.
Yeah, no, because I knew from the second... Like I saw you wear, I think it was a Spider-Man jacket that you had. I think like when I saw that, I was like, And so Emily and Upton and I like grabbed you and like ran you over the oval and were like, you, Zach, talk now, be friends.
Oh my God, that was a great day. You two were literally the first people I met and interacted with at Wagner that day. And like, especially, I think I can speak for Kirsten on this too, because we were both terrified of, that LC in particular, because we were like, we were like the only two theater people that were like right. in there, and there was like things with our schedules that was like conflicting with
yes I remember things. That and I was like, it's gonna be okay, I promise.
You know, you made it so much more like you like were so sweet right from the beginning, and we're just so like calming for both of us. It was one of my favorite parts of that of those early college years for sure.
Thank you, that's so sweet of you, David. But yeah, getting to the interview and things like that, how did you first get started in theater?
We were talking about this earlier, because I feel like this is one of the hardest questions ever, because
well, I will say this isn't necessarily the overture question yet. This is going to be more of like, how did you first get started? Like, did you like, did someone like get you involved and like go to a theater camp when you were little, or like, did you do like community theater? How'd you like first get started?
Oh, I can def answer that. All right.
yeah, no worries. Actually, no hard questions yet.
Well, actually, I guess it's like too many answers to that. So both of my older sisters did theater. They went to Catholic school, and the first show I ever saw them do was Seussical, and I saw Liam's interview, and we had like a similar origin story in this yeah. in this sense, because like I fell in love with that show. I would steal my sister's iPod every day and take it with me to school, and would just listen to it all the time. I'd even sing it out loud during class. I found out that a local community theater company in my town was doing Seussical at the same time.
Please tell me you played JoJo.
This is a funny story. So I go to audition. I hadn't auditioned for anything. I think I was around 5 or 6 at the time. It was around 2005. And so they tell me to prepare a song. So I prepared what was and still is my favorite song of all time. I walk in and it's like a children call. So like all these children the same age, they all got their classical golden age standard songs prepared. I'm the last one to go. And everyone goes, they sing their Oklahomas, their Sound of Musics and all that. Mm-hmm. I go and I stand up. I sing the SpongeBob song, The Best Day Ever. It's my audition song, my first ever audition.
You were doing the pop rock from the beginning.
I was ahead of my time, if I dare say. But so I did that, and then I got a call from them like either later that week or something like that, and they called me specifically to tell me that I was the only one that didn't get cast in their show.
What? Oh my yeah. God, that's so mean.
So that was my first audition, but my first time doing a theater show was I was in middle school. I was in the 7th grade, and I was very shy, very introverted. I didn't do like anything outside of school related. And I found out that a friend of mine who actually had a huge crush on at the time was auditioning for our production of Into the Woods Junior. Yeah. So so because of that, I went and auditioned for it, and they had this thing where everyone got cast. So I was like, okay, there's no worries.
You're like, no worries. I can't, it's impossible for them to cut me from this.
Exactly.
I'm still mad about that, by the way, but continue.
So I did that, and that was kind of like what did it. I did that, and I did, for the rest of my school years, I did every show up until that, and that way it fell into it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And then
I was Milky White too. I forgot to add that. I was the cow. I had an all white suit that they used. They originally used as a mouse costume from Stuart Little the previous year. And I was dressed up in that. I had like these little knee pads. I would walk around just literally standing up and then going from crawling on the ground and like walking
that's
around.
So funny. I hope that somewhere in the depths of things, maybe in film, who knows, I hope there's pictures of you as Milky White.
There are for sure pictures. If people are so inclined, they can stalk my Facebook. They're buried somewhere in there in the abyss. Yeah.
In the abyss of Facebook. Yeah. Oh my God. But likewise, how did you then get into film and screen work?
So film, that was kind of like the constant right from the beginning. It kind of similar with theater too, because like my sisters had always done that. It was always like, and I used to watch like old musicals like West Side Story and Sound of Music. Sound of Music is my sister's favorite movie, so we had that VHS and the 2004 Phantom of the Opera film. So I think that's like another answer as to how I got into theater was like through film, actually. But
that's interesting.
But film was always like the thing. That was always the kind of like the way that I had always been a part of my life. The earliest memory I have is back in 2002. I was 3 years old and my family and I were walking through our Target store and there's like this whole rack of Spider-Man DVDs. It had just come out. It was November. So that just came out on DVD and the second Harry Potter movie was in theaters at the same time. So my mother decides to get it and we come back home and I go up to my mother's bedroom where we had like this little 90s boxed gray DVD television set and she plays it and I she leaves the room and I sit there alone and that opening music plays and my life was changed forever. That is the earliest memory I have of like falling in love really with film. I mean, I was terrified of Spider-Man at that time. You know, I was like, I thought he was the villain. So I was had really bad nightmares for like a few days, but then like, you know,
you recovered. It was fine.
No. By the time 2004 came around, I was like, oh my God, that was the year to be alive. Spider-Man 2 is coming out. I was like collecting all the toys I could possibly get my hands on. And I was there opening night and saw it. I begged my parents to take me as many times as possible. And that was also 2004 was, I think, the year where really, you know, there's so many moments. Like to say that one moment was like the moment feels almost like a betrayal to like these other things that happened like throughout. The three most important films, I would say, though, that were like probably the most like life-changing in that way, in addition to the first Spider-Man, was Spider-Man 2, the SpongeBob SquarePants movie, and the Polar Express, which all came out back to back in that golden year of 2004.
That's a good one. That's a good like selection of movies. Yeah. No, and I totally, it's really interesting. I'm going to bring up an Instagram question in a second because it's relating to this conversation, but I wanted to jump in. And I think it's really interesting your connection with theater and film and how film was kind of the one that got you into theater. Cause I had a similar situation where I saw the movie Super 8 back in like my freshman year of high school, eighth grade, in and around there. And the fact that the cast was just like all kids who were like quite literally my age, like Elle Fanning's about my age, etc. I was like, oh, like people can like do that like as a job. And it was something about like that movie that made it click that I'm like, oh, I can do that. And then of course, right, that was when my high school was doing Carousel and I like got involved in like the high school productions in a new way. Like I'd always done theater up until then, but that's when I started to take it the most seriously. So it's interesting how like film can bring us to theater in that way.
It's beautiful, that synchronicity between each other. They're always seen as like two completely separate mediums, and there's like a lot of validity to that for sure, but there's really like the most important crucial thing at their heart that they share is like that time that you spend with each of those people involved in like getting like traveling to like other worlds and other places and knowing these people. It's like living a whole lifetime, but you do it for like many, many times through like many shows and many films.
Exactly. And now this is the Instagram question that I was telling you is going to be incredibly hard. So I'm just going to warn you now, but it fits with what we were talking about. So a loyal watcher, listener of the podcast show, whatever we want to call it, at ChrisXC34 said, I'm eager to hear your take on why Spider-Man 2 is the greatest film ever made. Now, granted, I will tell you, we are only 17 minutes into this episode, give or take. So let's make sure we keep it a little short just so we can get to everything else. But I'm also curious to hear what you have to say as well.
Completely understand. So kind of similar to my last answer, Spider-Man 2 came out of a time when films like as a whole were really kind of like my only way to connect with people. I had to get like really like self-pitying, but
you're fine.
I had a very lonely childhood where I had a lot of trouble like connecting and making friends and like all of that, and like I was always kind of like the outsider in my family. So movies were like the way that I kind of like lived, especially as I was growing up. And so by the time that Spider-Man 2 came around, I was already like a massive Spider-Man fan, and was like really excited about it in that way. But watching the movie, even at like that young of an age, was like, because it really was like the godfather of my childhood, or like the Citizen Kane, or it was the Back to the Future of my childhood. But like because like the filmmaking of it is so beautiful, like you watch every single frame. It's also just the most perfectly edited film, I think, in existence, because everything moves so fluidly, everything is so every scene is important, everything completely serves the entire story. And watching it at that early of an age, and the story too, just like has stuck with me in a way that like is incredibly hard to put into words. I feel like I'm not even answering the question.
No,
just
kind of
like dancing around it.
Well,
but
yeah, no, and I think that speaks to like your passion about it too, is that you're like, well, where do I even start? How do I even answer that question, you know? And I think it can also be like, it's the the greatest film ever made, simply because it was that important to you. And I think that that's really cool and really, yeah, I think, again, like shows your passion for it as well. And there's so many technical things you can speak to, but I think the personal is what like makes the most importance here.
I've spent years trying to find a good answer, and you just did that. You just found the perfect answer. It's that, and that's it. It's like, you know, and that's the beautiful thing about it, is like there's a best film for every person, because every person, like, I guess not to get too philosophical, but like has their own world and their own universe.
Yeah.
And in a way, everyone's world, not in like an egotistical way, but like everyone's world is like in their own way, a singular center of the universe. So yeah, there will always be a best film for every person, but it's like the depths and the realms that you can reach within each one is truly just a beautiful thing. And you articulate that so succinctly in a few words.
Well, thank you. I think you also articulated it very well, so like props to both of us on that one. But yeah, no, but like going into the more dreaded question that we were discussing earlier, for you, was there, and it can be one, it can be many, I understand, was there one like overture or light bulb moment of you're like, oh, this is what I want to do? And granted, for this one, let's say specifically theater, because I'll ask in about film and writing in a second.
For theater, I would say, I think it was that the time when, oh, actually, so the time I was in middle school was the first time I had really felt like I was part of a community. And I think that's what really made me fall in love with it, and make me want to keep doing it. But I don't think I realized that until my sophomore year of high school, because by that point I had gone through like a really low and bad stage of depression. And that year we did the Laramie Project cycle as our fall play, which was the original Laramie Project, and then the Laramie Project 10 years later as one complete work.
That's a tough one for a high school. Holy crap.
It was. And we had 6 male actors in the total cast, and what is, I think, like 40 male roles.
Yeah.
So we had split that up between a bunch of us. And then our musical that year was Pippin. It's something about those two shows, which I think genuinely on their own are like two of the greatest pieces of theater ever, especially Pippin. Like I've been thinking about Pippin actually recently. Like you look at that original Broadway production, nothing like that has ever been done before and since. Yeah. And it's like heartfelt, sincere, disturbing, and creepy, yeah, ominous. Like it's a whole bunch of things. But those two shows, like the way that they were, like connected with me at like a deeper level that I hadn't like really been as familiar with. And so doing those shows and doing that with that specific group of people who I genuinely felt like really close with and like felt like I could be myself, because that was a whole other thing about theater, was like allowing myself to kind of just like accept who I am, which has been like, you know, a whole a continuous journey still. But like I think that was the year where I really kind of like said to myself, like, I can't do anything else. This is what I have to do, like, for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And I think there's something to be said with like with in high schools, middle schools, et cetera, like the level of, oh, what can they and can't they get? And I feel like putting on a show like Pippin, which has a lot more emotional maturity than you would necessarily expect, I think, like you were just by pointing out, like you experiencing that was life-changing for you. And I think people need to keep that in mind, but that's just my own little soapbox that I'll step down from. But in terms of like film and writing, was there a moment for that for you? Because obviously you've always been taken with film. We were just talking about that, but what about specifically writing for film?
I actually do. That's a very easy answer. Actually, it was also middle school. I had just gotten in to a show called The Twilight Zone, and that was it. That I was just like it captivated. The first episode I ever saw of it was the one with It's A Good Life. It's the one where the kid has like mind control powers and he has this entire town like under his grip.
And unfortunately, that is where the YouTube episode cut off. It was completely unbeknownst to us until after the episode, as there was zero indication during it. But luckily, as I mentioned in the intro, I talked to David this past week to chat more and pick up where we left off. This was a phone call that we recorded, so please forgive the audio differences as well as background noise, but I still hope you enjoy nonetheless.
Yay, we have it on. Hi, David. So today is July 12th, several months later after we went live mostly last time. And again, I'm so sorry that the episode cut like it did. We had such a good talk that day.
Yeah, it was a really great time.
It was so fun, and I felt so bad that it got cut off and we couldn't hear all of it. But how are you? How's things?
Oh, things are good. Keeping myself busy, mostly. Had a project that came out, which was great.
Yes.
I
can't wait to talk about that here in a bit. What have you been up to this summer?
So I'm in the process. I've started trying to get back into writing. I'm on a summer break from my grad school writing program.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about like my thesis and that sort of stuff.
But, right.
I'm working on like a few scripts. One of them's a horror project, and I'm working with a friend of mine. We're working on a feature film, so we're actually in the process right now of like casting and putting a crew together.
That's so exciting. When you might like film that one?
So we're hoping to do it this fall, like throughout the course of a few months, like September through December.
Nice. That's super exciting. Just because I know like how jam-packed like your program is, so I can imagine like trying to work on your own stuff as well can be like a little bit crazy, but I'm sure that's been so much fun to work on and getting to do that. How was your first year at Emerson? Because now you've finally completed that first year.
Somehow it was really great. I met a lot of great people, and really got to like really kind of like expand what I could like know about myself as a writer. Mm-hmm. And also just like learning from everyone else. I worked on a short film screenwriting in the first semester, and then the second semester was all TV, and that was like the biggest learning experience for sure. I wrote a pilot for an original show that I developed, and I worked on spec writing for Barry, the TV show Barry.
Oh, that's
which
cool.
Was really, really, really fun.
That's super fun, and like that's some cool like assignments to get to work on and get to like test yourself. And also in like that same realm, you're also networking with all those people
that you're in the classroom with, because more than likely you guys will eventually try and collaborate or work together or try and learn how to work together in a writer's room, for example.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that was really fun too, like getting to do that with those people. Even outside of it, like we've talked about like collaborating on like some things. And it's just really nice to be able to have that, because I, my writing experience prior to this was literally just me locked in a room trying to like just like throwing balls against the wall.
Very solitary.
Very solitary. And just one of the biggest things about TV that I really, really loved was just the collaboration of it, like the fact that you have a writer's room and that you can literally just throw ideas out anywhere and just see where it takes the story.
Exactly. It's
a really exhilarating feeling.
That's so fun. How many more years do you have in the program? Is it one more or two?
Just one more. This coming year is going to be my last year.
Gotcha. Well, that's so exciting. And I'm so excited to hear about like your thesis. So I'm sure you're very looking forward to getting to like work on that and like put it together.
Yeah.
No, that'll be so much fun.
Well, it's the getting to the thesis part that I'm at right now.
No, I totally understand. It's the like, it's the building up and trying to be like, okay, this is my thesis. Here's a proposal, all that good stuff. I'm sure you have a similar way of going about it in your program as I did to mine. But yeah, so now this is going to be kind of funny. So in the half of the episode that exists from our chat before, we had just left off talking about how you had gotten into writing and how it clicked and that you wanted to do it and your overture moment for writing specifically. The lead-in that I have is that around middle school, you had gotten into the Twilight Zone, and there is a specific episode where a kid has, like, mind control over the town. Is that enough to go off of to try and talk about the end of that overture moment for you?
Oh, absolutely.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah, no, that episode, It's a Good Life, was the first episode of the Twilight Zone I had seen. It's kind of funny because, like, at that time, I found out about it through The Simpsons, because The Simpsons, one of the Treehouse of Horror episodes, was a parody of that specific episode.
Right.
And I remember thinking, like, wow, that's such a cool, interesting, scary idea. And I did some digging around to find out where that came from, and that led me to The Twilight Zone. And that really changed everything for me in a lot of ways, like just like in terms of storytelling. It really fostered a love for, like, that kind of, supernatural, anthology kind of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, and just in terms of, like, imagination, I think, too, like, I remember I wanted so badly to do something like that, and I started writing short stories, like right at that time that I really started getting into it, and I watched every episode after that, and somehow I like kind of fell off of it as I got older, as I got into high school, and I started acting more and thinking more about that. It wasn't until like after I was already in college and I started doing, taking a playwriting class and then a screenwriting class, that I started, like, to write again. But that kind of influence from the Twilight Zone has always been prevalent. It's just one of the greatest television shows, I think, ever, and I don't, like, none of the revivals that have come after it have really kind of compared.
Right.
Which is astounding for, like what, a almost 50-year, or I think 50-year-old program.
Right.
Yeah, no, Rod Serling is just an absolute genius, and I would say probably my biggest writing influence, as many others would say, I would assume.
Yeah, well, and I think that's so special that your overture moment, like, occurred so early, but then you also found all these other loves in theater and film, and then it was when you returned back to writing that you could look back and go,
oh yeah, this is the thing that I have wanted to do. It was just, I needed to learn those other things as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like, it's interesting kind of going through that and just not, I guess that's just like a life thing, like just never knowing like where you're going.
Right.
that sounded much more like open-ended, but like,
no, that's okay.
It was definitely like an interesting feeling to like kind of find that and kind of going through the process of like feeling like a writer, you know, like I guess like kind of earning that in a way.
Right.
Yeah.
I totally get that because I think it's funny because like I took a playwriting class and like we ended up like ending the class with like a full length play and it's like, yeah, but at what point are you like quote unquote allowed to call yourself a playwright or like a screenwriter and things like that? So I totally understand where it's like, okay, but like I've written, but do I call myself a writer?
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully it'll come soon.
Yeah, exactly. It's always like in your own mind or that imposter syndrome. And I feel like that's such with so many different parts of theater and even film in a sense. But definitely in writing, I can relate to that for sure. Your short film, Crossing, just released on YouTube like as of today, like 4 days ago or something like that. It released on YouTube. How exciting is that to finally like get to show it to everyone?
It's really kind of like a melting pot of feelings and emotions. Really, really happy and grateful that it got made at all. And yeah, that I'm able to share it really quite sooner than I think any of us really expected. We shot it back in like the end of January, beginning of February. It was a 4-month editing process.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I just, like, I'm really, really proud of it. Really proud of, like, everyone that helped with it. Like, they all were just absolutely incredible. Really, really generous with their time. Yeah, it's terrifying at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Just to kind of, like, have this thing that I've, like... So it was, like, a 4-month editing process, and we shot it over the course of 4 days. Before that, it was, like, a 5-month writing process.
Right.
So in total, this film was a year in the making, because the writing process was me like trying out many, many different variations, trying to figure out what to put in it, what not to put in it. And so, yeah, to kind of finally be here and have it exist is like exciting and also terrifying, the kind of just like putting it out there and now it's done.
No, totally. Totally. And this was made like outside of your program entirely. Like it wasn't an assignment. So like there's like a little bit more of like, there's so much of yourself in it in that way.
Yeah, for sure. The kind of core of it, of like the whole stitching of it together. But, my director of photography for it was, Julian Valdares, and, he's an incredible photographer and, yeah, we had 4 days with him to shoot everything, and the shots that he was able to get are just incredible. And the fact that we shot it in very, very frigid weather,
right,
the last week of January, and we had many outdoor shoots, and yeah, he was the cinematographer and the camera ops. He was operating all of his equipment.
Wow.
And yeah, because all the long shots, all the...
Yeah, there's some long shots in there that are, like, very extended with movement and dialogue. So I can imagine keeping that straight in your head while doing it in the cold, while also carrying the camera and everything involved in that was, like, hard. And to get all that in such a short amount of time is really impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, we had to get creative for sure with our environment. I wrote it with that specific train station in mind. It's a train station that's right down from the street of where I live. I'm there pretty much every day. And And it really kind of, the whole kind of film was birthed out of that image of that train station. And I remember talking with him about it and like what I wanted it to be and what how I wanted it to come out. And I just remember every single day thinking he must think I'm absolutely crazy to have to shoot all these extended long shots, you know. But the whole intention was to kind of feel the waiting, feel that kind of sense of like enclosure.
Absolutely. And I think you really get that too. And of course, the link to your show, your movie, will be in like the description of this podcast episode when it comes out, so people can check it out and know what we're talking about if they haven't watched it already. I'm also curious, because it also seems very autobiographical, what all inspired it in these characters in this story?
Well, definitely a part of it is kind of like all the things I've written thus far are really kind of like about how I feel in this particular moment. And sometimes it's a very specific thing. Mm-hmm. My film prior to this, Paper Airplanes, was I was writing it at the time I was about to graduate undergraduate school and thinking about applying to graduate school.
Right.
And so, and that reminded me of, you know, in high school, about to graduate, thinking of applying to college. And that was specifically about that. And other times it's kind of vague. It's kind of like a vague, open-ended kind of feeling, which I think this film was more of. I wanted to make something that was kind of like about childhood,
yeah,
and about coming back home, and this weird kind of in between.
Yeah,
being back in this place, but somehow like kind of being trapped in it, which is somewhat of how I feel now. Just being back home. It's a weird feeling because you're back home, and it's something that I absolutely like want to explore more. It's like that feeling of like being back home and still having that love and nostalgia and sentimentality for it, but it's not the same.
Right.
Like, towns are always changing, and it's a really, I think it's, nothing's more heartbreaking, because in a world that where you change, where just everything's constantly changing all the time, to find that the one place that you thought would never change, that would kind of like stay the way it is, suddenly you have all these buildings that are taken down, they're building new roads, they're changing mm-hmm. the roads. It's a really strangely like wall crashing, I think, kind of feeling.
Totally.
And that was kind of like the bigger idea that it kind of came from, and it kind of shrunk down to this singular point.
No, I think that absolutely makes sense in the context of this film, and I think it really shows as well. And I know I'm like, it's jogging my memory now. We talked about paper airplanes in the last version of this episode, but we didn't get it included. Also a fantastic, wonderful film that I will link in this episode. And I think people should watch both of those, because now that you're drawing the connections between the two, I'm like, absolutely, yes, this makes sense. And I'm interested to see how these particular feelings and different moments end up all connecting as a sort of like anthology for you as a filmmaker, you know, like getting to connect those things and experiences.
Yeah, so actually this was originally a sequel to Paper Airplanes. That's like how it started, which is still kind of in my mind as something I want to do eventually. I have a trilogy in mind of that kind of thing, it either being a direct sequel or another anthology.
Mm-hmm.
But for sure, no, yeah, that was something that kind of bled into the next. I can't watch the Paper Airplane film anymore.
Really?
Without absolutely wincing, you know?
No, I understand. Once it's been a little bit while, you're like, okay, yeah, that's a thing that I did in time, and now we can grow from that. Still a wonderful film, but I understand not wanting to watch it personally. So what was the process of, like, essentially producing Crossing? Because, like, look, you wrote it, you directed, you may or may not be in it, I'm not going to say, and then you edited it.
So what was it like to getting to work on all of these different aspects of this film?
I mean, it was really better because I had really great people around me, a really small crew. They're my friends.
Yeah.
So the lead actor in this, Zachary Treader, is an old friend of mine. We went to high school together. An amazing, amazing visual effects artist. You can find him under his name, Elwood Craze. He's working on a bunch of projects right now that are hopefully coming out soon. He has a documentary that he put out recently that about my other good friend, Kofi Datsi, who's a musical artist. And he put out this album, and my friend Zach filmed this whole documentary about it. It's really, really incredible. It's out there on YouTube.
That's cool.
Yeah, and if you look at Elwood Craze on Instagram, it'll be there as well.
Cool.
But I went to him with this. When we got back, we reconnected, and like I was like, yeah, I want to make something. And I told him about this script that I was thinking about before it was fully finished. I sent it to him, and we essentially went from there. He connected me with Julian, and I got my other friend Brady involved with it, and Abram Lucas, another friend of mine. So it was really fun to just like kind of like do that, you know, with friends. It definitely didn't feel kind of like, you know, for all the stresses that inevitably come from making a film, even a short film on a small scale as this one. You know, there are stresses that come from it, but it was still just us like making a movie together and just kind of like, yeah, just like hanging out. And it helped a lot, just like kind of like keep a clear head as to like what it's gonna be, like what we're kind of aiming for.
Right. Yeah. There's nothing better than getting to like quite literally just make art with your friends. Like,
exactly. It's a really, really special thing that I'm like incredibly grateful for, because otherwise, yeah, I know there's many more stresses that come with it.
Absolutely. And maybe this is perhaps already it, but I had written down the question, did you have a favorite part of making Crossing? Or maybe perhaps a favorite memory might be the better way to phrase it.
That is a really good question.
Might have been something that happened like off screen, because you only had the 4 days to film it too.
I really loved editing it.
Yeah.
I think this is my proudest editing work, personally. And that was because I had great people making it, that they all knew what they were doing. We all came together, and there was a curve of us like trying to figure out like how to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I think the train station stuff in particular was very much like us trying different things, and seeing what worked, and kind of like working through some of the outside obstacles.
Right.
I'm not really sure like a specific moment, because I was personally, as much great fun as it was to make it, I was also very terrified.
Yeah.
The whole time, and just hoping that what I was doing was gonna work, and that it would be something that everyone felt proud of, and that they felt that it was good.
Yeah.
And I think I'm still feeling that way, to be honest. And so it's kind of like it's almost like kind of like making it to the end of a race, being like, okay,
right,
like my breath, and like looking back and seeing like how it ended up, I think, with other people too in particular.
Right. And I can also imagine there was a certain amount of like, oh God, we only have these 4 days. I hope we can get everything that we need or that we like for the editing process as well.
Oh, yeah. No, that's also true. Like there was a whole bunch of other stuff that was going to be in this film that ultimately either came down to us not having enough time or feel like it didn't need it or didn't work in the story. Or kind of both. But so really up until the final stages, once the film was actually stitched together, I was biting my nails hoping it came out, and I hope it came out for people, you know, that do see, and I hope people do see it.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. I made sure till I was like, obviously I wanted to call, we were planning this call anyway, but I was like, I want to watch it. I remember us talking about like the very early stages of it when we talked last time. So I'm like, I want to watch Crossing when it comes out. And truly, like, you did a wonderful job, and I hope everyone else gets to enjoy it as well. Is there anything in particular coming up for you that we should know about? Like, obviously you'll be starting your second year in the fall, but I was just figured I'd float it out and ask and see if there's anything else coming up for you.
I remember I talked about my radio show, Midnight Theater, and
yeah.
promising that I would have something out within the next few months of when we recorded that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta stop doing that because it happens every time I say that. I mean, that is still a thing that exists. Hopefully something will come out of that soon. I have scripts that aren't finished, but still desire to go back to it at some point. I'm working with my friend Viraj. He wrote this script for a feature film that I'm going to be directing. We're casting it right now, and we're hopefully going to start production for it this fall. I would say that's the next big thing coming up.
Well, that's so exciting. Where can people find you, like, on social media and things so that they can keep up to date on the upcoming projects?
Oof. Well, since you mentioned that, people can find me most likely on my Instagram account, which is David_Leon_2, which is totally not a Spider-Man 2 reference. they can find me on Twitter. I think it's David_Leon007.
Love a good Bond moment in there.
Oh, I made that account in my James Bond phase when Skyfall came out. and also around my Doctor Who phase as well. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah, I have a YouTube account. That's where I post. That's where Crossing is.
Yeah.
That I think is just my name. If that'll probably be attached to somewhere.
Amazing. I'll go ahead and plug my socials while we're here. Instagram and Twitter on Laura_Marjoram. I don't know what I was trying to say there for a second, but that's okay. My website, www.lauramarjoram.com. Overtures on YouTube, on Spotify, Apple Music. Follow, comment, subscribe, whatever works for those platforms. Do the thing. It always helps. And this content that we're making right now specifically goes to Spotify and Apple Music. This one's not going to be on YouTube, so I don't know, follow both. You might get some fun things here and there that you won't get on the other. So I'm so happy that we were able to catch up and make up for the lost time that we had on that one episode. And of course, as soon as I start saying that, people start beeping and honking outside, but we will make do. It's fine. But yeah, David, do you have any final thoughts for those who happen to be listening in on Spotify and Apple Music?
Ooh, I hope you're well. I hope life is treating you well. I hope you're happy. I feel like that sounds more sarcastic than I mean. Like, I hope you're happy.
No, no, that came off very genuine.
I hope you watch my film, Crossing, and I hope you enjoy it. I hope you live long and prosper.
I love that. Nothing better. No better way to end that from a film person like yourself. So with that, I'll go ahead and stop recording. But thank you all for listening, and hope to see you on the next episode. Bye.